Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The government has described its climate action bill as the most ambitious in the world, and one of its key initiatives is a plan to transform electricity production at the Moneypoint power plant from coal burning to offshore wind. The €5 billion investment aims to see the end of coal burning at the County Clare plant by 2025, just 4 years away. Eamon Ryan, Minister for Transport and the Minister for Environment, Climate and Communications, joins me now in studio to talk about this and a few other things besides. Minister, can you tell us what it is that is going to be happening in Moneypoint 5-6 years from now? What's it going to look like?
ESB have yet to announce it this morning, and they'll do that later. It is an ESB initiative, and it's going to be one of many projects where we tap into the opportunity we have, the new economy that will develop in our renewable energy resource. We have a real huge opportunity here. Our sea area is 10 times our land area. We happen to be probably the windiest part on the planet. We have real good expertise. We know how to integrate variable renewable power supplies. And what the ESB, I understand, and later on today will be announcing, is that they're working with the Norwegian company, Statoil, Equinor, and that they will be developing Moneypoint now, not as the centre which it has been for 40 years of coal-fired generation, but instead switching, starting, as you say, 5 years plus onwards, towards it being the centre point where we bring that renewable power ashore. We ship it to the rest of the country, but also the real potential for the Shannon Estuary. And the same will happen in Cork, or Limerick, or Galway, or Waterford, and all Wexford, different parts of the country, is that that offshore energy comes ashore and also then creates jobs in the other industries that will be looking for clean power. Mm-hmm. And that's the opportunity for this country.
And that energy comes on shore and can be used at times of low demand to potentially manufacture hydrogen. So we're not just talking about something that's going to happen in Moneypoint. We're talking about switching the entire country or large parts of it to an entirely new form of energy.
You know a lot about this. You made that programme Hot Air 3 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? And we knew, you know, the science says we have to stop using fossil fuels in the next 3 decades, go to net zero. And the whole world is now committing to this. US, under the new administration, saying they're going to do it. European Union has its centre of their strategy. China, the same. So, yes, we have to look at alternatives. And the alternatives have to be better. If this is going to work, if we're going to stop going from in this unsustainable direction, then we have to have a better alternative economy. Even in the last 2 years since you did that programme, I would say that the understanding of that opportunity and that possibility has changed and accelerated, including, as you say, that the potential for this offshore power, and this will work where we're, particularly in the west and the northwest and southwest, it will largely be floating offshore turbines. These will be very large devices. First grouping about 15, 16 kilometres offshore, then further offshore again. And as we build up expertise and learn how we manage in that harsh Atlantic environment, we can build up real scale. When that power comes ashore, well, in Moneypoint, there's various advantages. We have two very large grid connections there, so that can be shipped right across the country straight away. But also, as the ESB are indicating, it can be converted. You use a system called electrolysis, where you convert the electricity to hydrogen. And hydrogen can be used in a whole variety of applications. It can be used to power ships, a lot of industry, and other transport applications, heavier typically. We'll electrify most of the private transport, the heavier transport and industry. We can use materials such as hydrogen instead of natural gas, instead of oil. And the benefit of that as well is it gives us balancing capability. So on those times when the wind isn't blowing, you have hydrogen stores, which can be stored as gas or as liquid, and you actually then can use that in power stations, which is zero carbon, no climate effect, and it gives you this balancing capability.
You've just articulated there absolutely perfectly how advanced the technology is, how much can be done. Yet it is only now that you and government are getting around to launching a consultation process off the back of your climate bill. Why wasn't this something that was started the moment that you got your feet under the desk in the department?
Can I say, it wasn't just started when I got my feet under the desk, but actually I think it's been happening in this country for several years. We are, rightly, we kind of hang our heads in shame that we haven't reduced our emissions as much as we should have. But we should, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years, this country is starting to show leadership. It started, I think, with the introduction of a Citizens' Assembly on climate change, where we brought 100 citizens in to
recommendations. But let's talk about the record of this government.
Yeah, but
though,
let me explain why. That was transformative because it came forward with very radical solutions, which the previous Oireachtas committee, all parties came together and said, yeah, we're going to go with this and show leadership. Because the question we asked the Citizens' Assembly is, how does Ireland go from laggard to leadership? We then set out in the previous Oireachtas a whole series of recommendations as to how we do it, including the likes of switching to renewable power in the way I've just set out. In fairness to Richard Bruton, he also put in place a climate action plan that included a lot of that ambition. What the new government has said and done is took that plan and said, OK, that was a 30% reduction. That was the time when Europe television programme was made, and said, OK, that's not going to be enough. We actually have to go to show real leadership, to be right at the top of class in the world. And the science says we have to have a 50% reduction in the next decade.
Absolutely. Which you broke down in the general election campaign last year into saying we need to make a 7% reduction annually. Yet, in the year since then, what have we seen happen? You're only launching a consultation process now.
And this is why I'm making this point. What has happened since? We did introduce, as we said we would within the first 100 days, the most ambitious climate action plan bill, which will set out how we achieve that. Critically then, this is the reason I went back over the last 4 or 5 years. It went to the Joint Oireachtas Committee. So again, we get all parties of the Oireachtas saying, OK, here's the bill as to how we commit ourselves in the next 10, 20, 30 years to make this transition. They spent 2 months looking at it and bringing in the experts and listening to all the different views and coming back with 78 recommendations on how it could be strengthened. We in government took that in January and said, OK, we worked in this subsequent period and we've introduced this bill, which is, I think, world leading in terms of its ambition. But what's really important and what gives me strength and confidence is that all the political parties in the Dáil, all the groupings, have bought in and agreed to it. So, and that's important because what that does, it gives a signal to the likes of the ESB and Equinor who are announcing this today and every other, in my mind, farmer and company and business that actually, do you know what? We are going to show leadership. We are going to be
good at
this.
All that you have actually showed leadership to date in is setting targets which may or may not actually be met and we don't have a great track record in meeting them. What you haven't done is set out your vision of what you want to see happen in intensive energy consuming industries. You don't have, you know, your roadmap on data centres. I don't see anything on the national herd. I don't see anything on airlines, on cement production. What's your vision in these areas?
Not just vision, it's not just targets, it's real change. In the last year's budget, for the first time ever, we started taking some of the steps that need to be made. For the first time ever, we set aside 20% of the transport budget for active travel, because that's going to be a key part of the transition. And it will also make for better towns, villages, cities, more healthy, active form of travel. We also introduced 250 million, quarter of a billion funding for retrofitting of houses to make it easier for people, particularly people in low-income housing, to start making the switch. We've also allocated 150 million to the likes of Bord na Mona so we get a just transition. Those jobs that have been lost as we move away from peat extraction are now being replaced. 350 new jobs in people.
We're hop skipping and jumping over a lot of different areas. Let's just delve down into transport for 1 second, because centrepiece of government policy in this area is still that there are going to be 1 million electric or hybrid cars on the road by 2030. All the engineers and the scientists say that's not going to happen. The motor industry says that's not going to happen. Do you still think that that's doable?
Yes, because I think they are better vehicles. And all the car companies, I'd say, are actually saying the exact opposite. They're saying they're realising now and they're switching their entire production processes towards electric vehicles.
The Irish motor industry just says it's not going to happen. We're not going to get that many of those cars on this island in that time frame.
I think we can and will, because I think people overestimate sometimes what you can do in a year, but underestimate what you can do in a decade. By the middle part of this decade, the electric vehicles will be cheaper, a fraction of the fuel cost, quarter roughly of the fuel cost, a quarter of the maintenance cost, because they have much fewer parts. I see no reason that the Irish motorists, putting their smart thinking on, say, well, actually, well, these are better vehicles. And yes, it will take that sort of time. It'll take 4 or 5 years for the car companies to ramp up production so that becomes possible. If we switch in that sort of time frame, in 4 or 5 years' time, towards them being the standard purchase, which I believe we can and will and is required, then we will make that leap. But can I say, first of all, one of the changes from the previous plan, the plan introduced by Richard Bruton, and we do need to go further. So we need to halve our emissions in transport. That switch to electric vehicles won't get us there. It'll only get us part of the way. What we need to do further is actually change the modal shift. So actually change
the way we travel.
The way we travel. And also, can I say, travelling less. I think what we can do is to come out of this COVID crisis for all the hardship and difficulties it has brought, but bring some of the benefits in remote working and a new 15-minute cities, town centre first strategy that actually brings people new housing close to where people are going to go to school, work, pubs, church and so on.
And Minister, in your personal map of the future, will people still be flying to Malaga for 10 years? Euro in 5 or 10 years' time?
No, they won't be going for 10 euro. I don't expect that. But people will still be flying. We're not going to... If I try to present this new future...
When you say they're not going to be flying for 10 euro, what's the specific initiative that calls an end to that?
I'm working on the European Council at this present time. We had a transport meeting last week, and one of the items on the agenda was the consideration into the future, whether we should regulate so that the really low cost, you know, that sort of flights for 10 euros aren't the norm. That will come from a European level rather than national level, because it requires international cooperation.
And what would they be if they're not 10 euro?
I mean, we didn't get into that specifics details at the European Council meeting, but there will be still people flying. We will still have, and we will have to develop solutions for that and for the other really difficult elements, the likes of the really big steel, construction, other industries. Every industry is going to take part. It will take 30 years. It is a transition that is going to take step by step. But it will start, particularly in the energy side here, because we have this advantage already in renewable power and in the obvious intelligence in investing in energy efficiency, which leads to a whole range of better outcomes. We will see in the likes of transport, the switch to EVs, the switch towards public transport, switch to active travel.
In the meantime, we're seeing that the data centres are going to, in 6 years' time, be consuming a third of all of our electricity supply, and that they're going to be adding 1.5 million tonnes to our carbon bill in that time. Is it time for you to require Amazon and Apple and Facebook to do more in the way of generating their own renewable electricity?
Yes, but can I put, before answering that and going into it, can I just put one thing in context? That ESB announcement, as I understand today, is about 1.5 gigawatts of offshore wind they're looking at developing. We're looking at something like 35 gigawatts of offshore wind that we can develop. That's about 7 times the power we're using at this present moment. So we will have the potential in this new economy to be able to base a digital industry here, other industries. We will have data centres and back on the back of them, significant corporate tax revenue and employment and economic security for this country, because we will have this clean electricity supply available for us. But we need to go further. And what you say is absolutely, I'm already talking to the sort of data center companies to say that they have to play their part. Their backup power supplies, which they do have, they need to have it for security reasons, can be part of this balancing capability we need. We have also started, starting this summer, in Tala data centre, Amazon one I think it is, where we're actually taking some of the waste heat from that data centre and connecting it to heat local housing. That's the sort of balancing, clever use of energy, including the use of data centres, to help us meet this balancing capability. Okay. That's where we're going to go.
I have to move on because we're up against the clock, I'm afraid, here, Minister. Yesterday, Liveline heard an absolutely Kafkaesque story from an Israeli fully vaccinated woman who came into this country and was required to quarantine mandatorily in a hotel, and even though she could prove that she had been vaccinated. Is this system working properly at all?
Yes, because we're following health advice. And it will change. This is not something that's fixed. It will change as the likes of the changing circumstances in Israel, their numbers seem to have dropped quite significantly. We will have to continue and adapt in countries like that where the risk is reduced. the requirements for quarantine will change. And this is not going to be a permanent fixture. This cannot be designed as a way that's going to be there forever and a day. We need connectivity. Mm-hmm. We need the ability for people to come home and travel and so on.
But if you are following the most up-to-date health advice, how come people from France and from Italy and Germany aren't being required to quarantine? People from Israel are.
And that is being considered at the moment, and expect government next week is due to meet to consider the advice of the health authorities, who's saying we should be looking at countries like France and Germany and including them on a quarantine list now because of the very high incident and the concern about variants in those countries.
Okay, so as the Minister for Transport, would you be in favour of putting them on the list now?
I was on the record earlier on the week saying yes, I heed the health advice. And I think, but it's health advice which is recognising that it is not firstly going to give us complete security. We still have a border with Northern Ireland where we will not be able to seal it fully. What it does do, it gives us the potential to reduce the risk, act as a deterrent, which we do need at this time to protect this country in this critical next 2 months as we get our vaccination programme rolled out. It's not going to be a permanent fixture. We have to have an exit strategy as well as an entry strategy to win it. The logistics are very difficult. It is a real imposition and a hardship on a lot of people. No one wants to be doing it. But my sense, or the government's sense, is that we are correct to follow health advice in these circumstances, particularly in the coming 5 to 6, 7, 8 weeks when we have a critical period to get our people vaccinated to reduce the risks. And in those circumstances, yes, but it's not permanent, it's temporary, and it is...
As you said, would you be in favour of introducing it for all countries?
No.
Why not?
Because I think in instances where the rates are very low, the difficulties that it presents aren't warranted. It is only can or should only be done where there's very specific concerns regarding variants or rather are very high incidence rates. It's not something that we're going to.
And also, quarantine in a very short space of time has caught 10 positive cases, though. You spread the net wider, you could catch an awful lot more and prevent an awful lot more community spread.
And we also have to stop our own community spread. There's 400 cases a day still at the moment. Yes, we have found 10 in this period from the, I think, 480 or so people who've come in on the quarantine process. So we still have high incidence in our own country. And that is our first attention. But I go back to why we are all looking at quarantine the next 2 months. It's because as our numbers come low and as the vaccine reaches a critical stage, that's when we do want to reduce the risks. That's why we are introduced a quarantine system. The only country in Europe to have done it, probably the most conservative approach. But I listened to what Ronan Glynn said last night. He says we're being conservative here to protect public health.
Okay.
I think that is appropriate.
And has the disagreement over whether Hazel Chew should be allowed to run for the Shannon exposed the fact that there are, in effect, two Green parties?
They're not two Green parties. There never has been in our own party. There's always different views, different political strategies and approaches. That's absolutely appropriate when they're a political party. I don't see that as in any way. I think it's one of our strengths. You can actually have differences. There are different views as to what approach you take. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But if there is a split, if there is such robust divergence of views and opinions within the Green Party, it doesn't speak to a unified, strong party, does it?
Unified very much on the agenda I was speaking about earlier on, that we're here actually at a critical moment in time in our country to actually deliver the practical changes that improve people's quality of life and to protect nature. We are in a biodiversity and climate crisis. We have critical work to do in helping to address that, and we're absolutely united on that task.
Minister Eamon Ryan, thank you very much for joining us this morning. We'll take a break.